Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Union organizing hits a new workplace, the United States Congress. Food service workers walk out of the San Francisco airport, and another Trader Joe's trying to unionize. Today on the show, the latest from the Heat and Frost Insulators, and we check in with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters in Washington State. Welcome to the Wednesday, September 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Pete Almini is going to be our first guest on the show today. Longtime supporter of the show we call America's Workforce. He comes to us on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators, and this would be their labor management trust. The website you want to check out is mechanicalinsulatorslmct.com. Pete is a longtime union guy, and he's going to talk, number one, about voting. We've got elections, midterms, just weeks away. And we're going to get into the importance of voting in elections. Things like knowing the issues, not necessarily the headlines. I always say on the show, there's a lot of noise out there. You got to cut through the noise. You got to listen to your union leadership on labor-friendly candidates. Pete's going to really get into that one. Now, there's a lot of resources out there in the media, but you have to choose wisely. And maybe if there's some confusion, go back to your union leader and ask him or her about what you just heard or what was reported. I know this is frustrating. It takes time, but I'll tell you, elections matter. Elections matter. Pete, by the way, is based in New Jersey, and I want to tell you, the state AFL-CIO has done a great job of educating people, getting union brothers and sisters involved in politics, and they just recently launched a massive door-to-door voter education effort. This happened on Saturday to mobilize union members. And, you know, Pete is one of them. I'm sure he'll speak to that as well. It even comes from the national leadership. Liz Schuler posted yesterday about what we have seen happen in the Biden administration. We've seen some good legislation. The CHIPS Act, infrastructure, inflation reduction. Why did that happen? How did that happen? Because you got the right people in office. You didn't see this happen in previous administrations. So we'll touch on all of that with Pete Almini. We're also going to get into energy audits. Apparently, there's plenty of energy audits, but few and far actually address the insulation of mechanical insulation. And what he's looking to do here is add some language to the National Energy Conservation Policy Act, which goes back to 2007. Yeah, I would think that would need some updating, don't you think? So Pete Almini will be joining us in about 10, 15 minutes. Then we're going to go to Washington State and link up with Jamie Fleming. Jamie's been on the show before. She is the Director of Communications and Research on behalf of Teamsters Local 174. Website is teamsters174.com. .net. What a background Jamie has. She graduated from Georgetown University going back to 2007 with a degree in finance and international business. She immediately went to work for the Teamster headquarters in Washington as a financial analyst. Then in 2012, she moved to the Seattle area, continued in her role as a Teamster financial analyst. Then she started working out of Local 174, and then she became a member of Local 174. Her role as Director of Communications, she handles the website, which I just mentioned, writing content for the site, taking pictures, running their Facebook page. And get this, she speaks English, French, and Mandarin Chinese. That's what an education at Georgetown will do for you. It's amazing. What a background she has. We're going to talk about a contract that was finally reached. Boy, this was a struggle. After first going on strike nearly 10 months ago, concrete drivers in the Seattle area now have ratified a new contract with several suppliers. We're talking 225 concrete delivery drivers. The contract goes to 2025. One demand that did not get met, and we'll address this, was an adjusted medical plan for retired members who have not yet reached Medicare eligibility. Boy, there's a lot of people in that category. But the bottom line, many are saying it's a pretty good deal. They're able to get most of their demands on the contract. The biggest requests, including medical coverage for active employees, pension increases, and also new rules to solve workplace safety issues. More than 75% of the voting workers approved the new deal. So finally, they got some resolve on that contract. Yeah, Jamie is fun. We'll have an interesting conversation with her later in the show. And now, what's happening in our world of labor? Let's find out. This segment on America's Workforce brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Boy, they've had an interesting time navigating this market right now. BoydWatterson.com. The union organizing wave that has hit Amazon, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's came to a new workplace this week. You know what it is? United States Congress. That's right. Staff members in the office of Representative Andy Levin out of Michigan, a Democrat, voted unanimously to join the new Congressional Workers Union. The congressman's staff is the first on Capitol Hill to gain union representation following a vote by House Democrats to extend new labor rights within the legislative branch. And the union says staffers of two others, Ro Khanna out of California and Ilhan Omar out of Minnesota, will vote probably later this week. The union said in a statement that it is ecstatic about the landslide win in Levin's office, and it looks forward to bargaining a contract. Got a comment here from the group. The workers clearly and emphatically expressed their desire to bargain collectively and now have a seat at the table to determine workplace conditions as well as benefits. Now, a little history on this. Congressional offices were traditionally carved out of collective bargaining laws, but Democrats, led by Levin, passed a resolution, this goes back to May, clearing the way for them to form unions. Now, because of the way Congress is set up, the workers must unionize office by office rather than one large bargaining unit, meaning some will likely opt for representation and others won't. The Congressional Workers Union has said that forming unions would be the best way to push for better pay and safety standards for those who work for lawmakers at the Capitol. Staffers say many salaries are very low. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced a new salary floor in May at $45,000. I don't know what it was before that, but $45,000 doesn't go very far in Washington, D.C., mind you. As a member of the Congressional Workers Union Organizing Committee told the Huffington Post earlier this year, there is a culture of secrecy, and you have to pay your dues to make your way up the ladder. That's really what allows these workplace abuses to fester. So being without union rights left workers in a place where they cannot address those concerns. This was certainly an issue to watch because some Democrats did not think it was smart for their staffers to unionize. But then again, they could be called hypocrites because where did they get their money? Many of the unions support Democrats over Republicans. There's a history there. Bottom line is they had to move forward on it. The House measure passed on a party line vote over the opposition of Republicans. Now the Senate would need to pass its own, and it's doubtful anything will happen there. But you got to take a look at Andy Levin on this. He is a pro-labor guy, And he was an organizer with the Service Employees International Union and the AFL-CIO before he came to Congress. Again, what did I just say a few minutes ago? Elections matter. You get the right people in office, good things happen. Good things happen. Meanwhile, around 1,000 airport service workers, food service workers, this is at the San Francisco International Airport, went on strike this week demanding better pay and maintenance of their health care benefits. The workers organize with Unite Here Local 2 and work at 84 of the airport's restaurants, lounges, and coffee shops. How about this vote? 99.7% of them authorized a strike. Yeah, that's a clear majority, don't you think? Many of the workers who make an average of around $17 an hour have not seen a wage raise in nearly 3 years. Wage negotiations have taken place over the last 9 months. Workers don't make enough to pay the rent or put food on the table for the kids. That comment from Anand Singh, who is the president of Unite Here Local 2. Anand said, "We'll be out here as long as we need to be until we get the negotiations going and get a contract that workers deserve." Now, earlier this month, workers engaged in civil disobedience by blocking traffic in front of a terminal at the airport in support of workers demanding higher pay, leading to 41 arrests. And the food service workers at the airport, this again is San Francisco, previously struck for higher wages going back to 2014. That lasted about 2 days, by the way. All right, let's go to a Trader Joe's now. The Trader Joe's union push continues as workers at a location in Williamsburg, which is actually part of New York City, they have a petition to unionize with Trader Joe's United. Now, the issues in the campaign include low wages, lack of health care access, inadequate time off policies, and an unfair disciplinary process. Now, in line with Trader Joe's recent accusations of union busting, the grocery chain reportedly fired one of the organizers at the store just a day after management discovered efforts to organize. That store, by the way, employs 185 workers, according to filing documents. And if the union drive is successful, that location in Williamsburg would become the third Trader Joe's with a union in the United States. They would join stores in Massachusetts as well as Minnesota. And we got to congratulate the workers at Elementis Specialties, Inc. This is out of New Martinsville, West Virginia. They join the International Chemical Workers Union Council, which is part of the Food and Commercial Workers, and that would be Local 566C. And they did this for better wages and benefits that come with a union contract. We all know that Elementis is a global chemical company, and the 25 workers are employed as chemical operators, lab techs, material handlers, and maintenance technicians. Their president, Lance Heasley, said, "The union is proud of the solidarity the workers of Elementis displayed with their unanimous election win." Gotta love that word, unanimous. All right, quick break. When we come back, Pete Almini on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or do both. AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good wages, good benefits, ulagency.org. All right, let's go to line number one, talk to my Jersey guy, Pete Almini, on behalf of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators. This is the Labor Management Trust. He serves as executive director, longtime contributor and supporter on the show, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. Pete Almini, how are we doing today, my brother?
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. You know who says hi? Joe DeMarc, sheet metal workers, Smart Local 25. We had him on the show 2 days ago, and he's based in Jersey. And I said, well, if you're in Jersey, you got to know Pete Almini. And first thing he said, oh, I know Pete. We go way back. So anyway.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, he just celebrated 42 years, and you're telling me, you're 38 years now with the insulators?
I'm at 38 years, yes.
38. That's quite an accomplishment. God bless you for doing what you're doing, and you do a great job educating our listeners. And speaking of educating, today we're going to educate our listeners on voting, the importance of voting in elections, knowing the issues, all that good stuff. And Pete, I got to salute your labor federation over there, the New Jersey State AFL-CIO. I know they launched a massive voter education effort. This was just on Saturday, but they have a long history of getting union brothers and sisters involved in city councils, in school boards, in whether state representatives, senators, there's a lot of positions that are available, and they work hard. They got the union background. They speak to working class issues, and many times, more often than not, it seems, they do get elected. So, Pete, talk to me about the importance of voting. I'd like to hear your perspective. Go ahead.
Well, it warms my heart because you're talking about my home state of New Jersey, and the political push to be able to elect our labor-friendly candidates is part of the culture in the great state of New Jersey. And, you know, people talk about New Jersey being one of the bluest states in the country, and unless you come from New Jersey, people don't realize that's not by accident. It's not just by choice. I believe that the labor movement in New Jersey is extremely powerful, and we get that power from mobilizing the grassroots of all of the unions within the state, whether it be from the building trades or even just AFL-CIO unions that work in factories and municipalities and state employees unions. That's the police, the fire, the teachers, as well as the building trades. Obviously, I'm very familiar with building trades efforts. And from the time I was an apprentice goes back a long time now. You just mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way up to being a business manager from mid-September or early October all the way up until Election Day. Every Saturday, you can count on the labor movement doing labor walks. And that was spearheaded by the AFL-CIO. And what a labor walk is that we would mobilize our union members. We would have a list of addresses that we would go to. And those addresses were labor-associated households. So when you knock on the door and you're able to offer some literature if they wanted it, and just you just reminded the people at that house, that union household, that Election Day is coming, and we have to make sure that we support our labor-friendly candidates. And we would offer literature if they would like it. And it was just a very friendly, old-school approach of talking people face-to-face. And you go from one house to the next. And the AFL-CIO did a great job organizing those lists. And what we had to do with the labor unions were to provide the boots on the ground and be able to go door to door. And it was a good way to spend a Saturday morning and a Saturday afternoon. We used our rank and file members. We used our retirees and also used our apprentices. And with my apprenticeship background, that was a great teaching time or education time to be able to let our young apprentices know that a lot of the work that gets secured is through our politicians that we support and help them get elected. And then the trade-off is, you know, they're going to help us secure proper work for us.
Mm-hmm.
But by mobilizing our membership and going, and not just knocking on the doors as labor walks, but we also do phone banks. And kind of annoying when you get those phone calls, but the phone calls are designed to be able, again, to call up the union households and just to remind people of when Election Day is, and please make sure you go out and you vote for the labor-friendly candidate. And if you don't know who the labor-friendly candidates are, the AFL-CIO or your local union, I mean, there's a plethora of information out there to be able to find out who these candidates are.
Yeah.
And it's more than just the Democrats. I mean, I know it used to be, and it's easy to be said, the Democrats are designed to benefit the working families. And in most cases, that's true. But not in all cases. And we have to have the resolve and the wherewithal and the intelligence to be able to realize that there may be some Republicans that are labor friendly, and we have to support, or even independent for that matter.
Sure.
It's important for us to support the candidates that are going to support our labor movement. We don't have to agree on all of the issues. I don't think there's a candidate that's out there that's 100% we are totally 100% happy with. But if the majority of the issues that they support, and if some of them are labor issues, well, we have to take a consideration and be able to get those candidates in office.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're in office, you know, we as the labor movement, labor leaders, have to remind these legislators, politicians, call it what you want, you know, we were there to help you get in office. And, you know, there's an end result that we're looking for, and we're just looking for fair and equitable opportunities for our union contractors to bid work.
Right, right. We're talking about accountability. You got to hold their feet to the fire once they do get elected. Pete, I have to ask you, there's a lot of people that feel that their vote doesn't count. I'm sure you've had experience on that. I'm wondering, sure. What do you do in a situation like that when they come up to you and say, I'm not going to bother, they're a bunch of bozos, leave me alone, I'm not going to vote? How do you handle somebody like that?
Well, that's a very common position that people take. And the easy answer is, nobody wants to hear it, but it is the truth. If everyone took that opinion, then nobody would vote. Mm-hmm. And then you're allowing a small percentage of the population that, if they're able to get organized, they can swing elections. Even if the election is tight, you know, it's coming down to a small percentage of votes. You know, 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%. And if everyone takes the approach where my vote doesn't count, you know, where do you stop it? Then that person is going to convince three other people. And now you have four votes not counting. And if everyone says that and convinces other people, it's exponential.
Sure.
You know, 3 becomes 20, 20 becomes 100, and 100 becomes 1,000. And that's the mindset that we have to stop. One of the bottom line true value beliefs that we have in America is democracy. And democracy depends on the people's voice. And your voice is no louder than go out and be able to vote. And I always get a little charged up when I go out and vote, because I feel that's one of my civic duties. It's one of the things that I do as an American. And I can remember, on a personal note, I was a small child at the time, and when my grandfather used to go to the polling office to vote, he used to put a suit on. And I said, Pop-Pop, that's what we call our grandfathers. He said, Pop-Pop, why are you getting dressed up to go vote? And he sat me down. He says, and he fought in World War One. He says, my generation, we worked hard and we fought for this country for the ability of democracy. And the ability to vote is a privilege. And it's the right of an American. And it's something that I respect immensely. And when I go to the polling booth, I want to be able to have the respect for my country. And I feel it's my duty not only to vote, but also to be dressed up. And I was probably 6-7 years old, and I still always remember that.
Sure.
And I'm not saying yet people had to get up and dress and get dressed up and get in a suit to go vote, but we do have to go out there and be able to exercise our American right and voice your vote. And we have an influence on who is going to run our country, our state, our county, our municipalities, our school boards, our zoning boards of the local township. I mean, it's so important. It's so easy for people to complain and criticize and point fingers and to be frustrated. The least people can do is go out there and be able to cast your vote.
I think you'll find out the ones that complain the most are the ones that don't bother to vote. I've seen that many, many times. But I have to tell you, Pete, thanks for sharing that story about your grandpa. That's why we call that the greatest generation. That was very heartwarming. Thank you. Pete Almini joining us on our live line on behalf of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators. More to come. We're going to get into energy audits and the 2007 National Energy Conservation Policy Act, which probably needs to be updated. Also in the show later on, we're going to go to the state of Washington, specifically Seattle, check in with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, and the local 174 just secured a contract where they are delivering concrete, and they had a struggle. And Jamie Fleming will talk all about that back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. So keep them coming, please. All right, let's go back to our live line and rejoin Pete Almini. Pete is the executive director of the Mechanical Insulators, LMCT. That's the Labor Management Trust. So talk to me about this Energy Conservation Policy Act going back to 2007. So we're looking at something that goes back 15 years. The first thing that comes to mind, maybe we need to look into that. Is it working? Does it need to be updated? I know there's plenty of energy audits, but when it comes to insulation, maybe we're cutting it short here a little bit. Pete, what's going on?
No, you're exactly right, Flash. And thank you for bringing the subject matter up. As you and I have discussed before in other podcasts of the importance of mechanical insulation energy audits, this audit provides a very specified and focused look at the mechanical insulation efficiency of a building. And the term energy audit is a value term, and it's a service that a lot of companies provide. And an energy audit is going to evaluate the energy consumption of a building, to sum it up, quite frankly. But it focuses in on the mechanical systems, the heating, the air conditioning system. Is it properly functioning to supply that building with the temperature control that it needs? And it looks at the size of the unit, looks at the size of the structure, the size of the buildings. It, in certain degrees, it'll look at the building envelope insulation. That's the insulation in the walls, the windows, the roof. But very, very, very few take into account of the insulation that is provided on the mechanical systems. And in many cases, these energy audits miss the boat. While it is important to look at all of that other building envelope structures with the insulation, if you're not evaluating the mechanical insulation, then you're missing a large part of it. And the value of mechanical insulation is often misunderstood and undervalued. And we don't expect anyone to be an expert in mechanical insulation. And that's why we can offer a mechanical insulation energy audit. And what that's going to do is evaluate the mechanical system and it's insulation. And if the insulation is not 100%, and most buildings are not, 10 to 30% of all U.S. buildings are lacking mechanical insulation, up to 10 to 30%.
Wow.
And it doesn't mean your utility cost is going to be 30% higher than it should be. It's exponential. And your utility costs are going to be a lot higher than the 10, 30%, even 50 to 60%. And if you think about it, if the insulation is installed on that steam system that's operating that building, that means the boiler is going to work less. If the boiler or the furnace is working less, it'll be less fuel consumption. Less fuel consumption is going to be cheaper for the building owner. But the less that boiler and furnace is working, that also means less harmful air pollutants are being put into the atmosphere. So it saves money, it saves energy, and it reduces air pollutants. What the energy audit does is be able to show people real proof, dollars and cents, how much money you're going to be saving. In 2007, there was a bill that became law that looked at energy conservation and how do we make our federal buildings more energy efficient with energy audits. And just recently, I was reviewing that, I'd say recently, 6 months ago. Nowhere in that law does it even address mechanical insulation. Nowhere does it address mechanical insulation energy audits. And currently, we're working with Congresswoman Linda Sanchez out of California, and we're drafting up language that hopefully we're going to be introducing in the next couple of weeks, if not this week. I'm very hopeful it's going to be happening real soon. And we are going to be inserting additional language to that current law that's going to require federal buildings to conduct a mechanical insulation energy audit. And I'm hoping it's going to be a game changer. And we have to make our building facilities, our building owners, in this case, it'll be the federal building owners, to be able to understand the value of mechanical insulation.
Pete, I have to ask you, going back to 2007, did they deliberately leave that out? Or, I mean, what do you think happened there? I mean, mechanical insulation's been around a long time. How did we miss that?
I don't think it was deliberate. I just think, and it's something that I deal with all the time, and even educating our legislators to introduce this language. It takes a tremendous amount of information and convincing and awareness to have people understand what mechanical insulation is. And it's a technology that's not seen. It's hard for people to equate. You know, I always say it, if your roof leaks, you got a roofing problem, you need a roofer to fix it.
Right.
Or roofing technology. If you go to that light switch and the light switch doesn't turn on the light, you got an electrical problem. If your pipes are leaking, you got a plumbing problem, and on it goes. Those crafts are easily identified on the solution. If your mechanical insulation's not working right, people aren't going to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the thermostat and they adjust the thermostat until the room gets cold or until it gets warm, and they're satisfied with that. What they don't realize is that mechanical system may be working harder than it has to. And you're consuming fuel and energy resources, and you're also increasing pollution. And here's another aspect of the systems working harder. Your life cycle of those systems are going to be cut shorter. For example, your air conditioning system probably is designed to last 20 years, maybe 30 years. If it's properly maintained, it will last a long time. But if you're using that system 50% more than it has to, so is the life cycle is going to get reduced in half as well.
Sure.
So now what should be lasting 30 years, now it's going to last 15 years. And, you know, there's a bill that people go to realize, oh, my God, we need a new air conditioning system. And it could be a few $1,000s, could be a couple $1,000,000, depending upon the size of the unit. So what the audit's going to do is be able to make people realize what the value of mechanical insulation is. And when I speak to legislators and even Linda Sanchez's office, I provided them with some examples of energy audits. And when people see the amount of money that can be saved, it's a jaw-dropping experience because people don't realize how much money is being wasted by not having mechanical insulation properly installed. The return on investment is 6 months to 2 years.
And Pete, we can't do this quick enough. I'm sure you're keeping your eye on energy prices. I, for one, natural gas. My home is heated by natural gas. I have to renew a contract. It's going to be triple of my current contract. I mean, prices are going up. And this kind of reminds me of what happened back in the 70s when gas prices, all fuel prices went up. And all of a sudden said, hey, maybe we need to insulate our homes. We didn't do that prior to that. So this is the time to do it. So we'll definitely stay on this issue. The National Energy Conservation Policy Act. We're talking about what happened 15 years ago and how they need to address it with mechanical insulation. Pete, always a good job when I have you on the show. Appreciate it. I learn a lot. Our listeners learn a lot. And make sure, we'll leave it on this note, make sure you vote. We got a very, very important midterm election coming up, and it's right around the corner. So you take care, stay safe, stay strong, stay in touch. Okay, brother?
Thank you, Flesh. Take care.
Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com is that website. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to Seattle, Washington. Check in with Teamster Local 174. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyAndBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. All right. Let's go to Seattle, Washington right now. And joining us on line number two is Jamie Fleming. Jamie is Director of Communications and Research on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. This would be Local 174. She handles their website, does a lot of work. She's got an interesting background, a degree in finance and international business. And she went to work for the Teamster headquarters in Washington, D.C., actually as a financial analyst, and then they sent her over to Seattle. And she's here to talk about a pretty good contract that was reached for the cement drivers. Jamie Fleming, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's great to be here.
And I mentioned this earlier in the show. You speak And this, I guess this is Georgetown education here. You speak English, French, and Mandarin Chinese. Now, we'll do the, we won't do the interview in Chinese today. We'll do it in English. Is that okay with you?
That sounds just fine. It's about 4:30 a.m. where I'm at right now, so I think English is probably the best choice.
Okay, good, 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 good. That's amazing. What an interesting Let me ask you, with a background like that, how did you end up with the Teamsters? I have to ask that question.
Oh, when I was getting ready to graduate university, all my classmates were going to work for investment banks, and I just realized I did not want to do that. Didn't feel right, so ended up getting a job with the Teamsters, and now I'm, 36, covered in tattoos, that swear like a longshoreman, swear like a truck driver, I guess. And I've never had a normal job, and I love it.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because we do the show at Ironworkers Local 17, and it's changed my life as well, hanging around those guys. It's amazing. It really is amazing. So you got your hands full there. How many members in 174? Let's start right there.
We have about 8,600 members.
Ooh, that's pretty good. Is that up, down, steady, what?
It's been pretty steady. Yeah, a lot of ours, mostly truck drivers in the local, a lot of UPS. And so, in the pandemic, while some went down, a lot grew.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm keeping my eye on UPS, because that's going to be a big one for the Teamsters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, next year. I know there's some fireworks already starting on that one, and I definitely want to stay on top of that one. But you're here to talk about the cement drivers and I guess the suppliers. This was a tough one. Can you take me back to what happened here, Jamie?
Oh, yeah. I'll have to struggle through my, emotional trauma from that whole experience. That contract expired last summer, so it's been well over a year now. And negotiations weren't going great. The companies were really dug in on a pretty untenable and ridiculous position, because our demands were not unreasonable. They wouldn't break, and so we ended up taking them out on strike. It started November 19th. That date is burned into my memory. And it was 4.5 months over the holidays, over the winter, out on the picket lines in the cold. They were bringing in scabs. They even had some members of different unions crossing the picket line to drive mixer trucks. I mean, very, very terrible situation. 4.5 months later, we put the group of drivers back to work so that we could continue negotiating, because quite frankly, it seemed that everyone was suffering except these companies were sitting there laughing as they watched everyone suffer. And so we realized that was not going to work out over the long term. We had to put the members back to work for the sake of the community and for the sake of our people as well. Continued to negotiate, and finally, were able to reach a deal that ratified just a few weeks ago by a margin of 77%.
That's pretty good. I get the sense here on what you just said. They got pleasure out of watching their pain. Is that a good description of what happened there?
That is certainly how it felt. I mean, it was everyone on that side, even sitting there on the picket line, and when a scab would cross or when the management people would leave for the day, they were smiling and laughing at us. And it was just, it was hard. It was a really difficult situation.
And we're talking, I guess it was four suppliers altogether. Is that right? Is that how many were involved in this? And they were just playing hardball then, right?
Yeah. So it was sort of, well, there was actually six, because we had Gary Merlino Construction dump truck drivers who were sort of under a separate contract. They were out on strike as well. And then Lehigh Cement was out with us, but those two groups still do not have settled contracts right now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they were doing pretty well as far as making money. Did you have any numbers on that when you were in the middle of this whole thing? Because I'm seeing so many that have gone on strike. Jamie, yesterday we were talking about Weyerhaeuser, the lumber company, which is in your area up there in Washington.
It is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They made a ton of money during the pandemic because everybody was remodeling and they're building new homes and all that stuff. Lumber prices went up, but man, they're screwing over the workers. Was that a similar situation with the company you talked about?
Yes. Well, concrete basically operates as a cartel around here. I mean, they set the prices, and whatever they say the price is, that's what it is. They pass every cost along to their customers. You know, they'll just, I mean, gosh, when Seattle passed a new sick leave law in Washington State requiring paid sick leave, these guys just added a dollar a yard surcharge to every yard of concrete they sold, saying, hey, this is to pay for the sick leave law. So nothing that we wanted in our contract was really going to cost them anything, because they would just pass that cost along to their customers like they always do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they were making out like bandits. And quite frankly, it was the contractors and the other building trades workers that were bleeding the longer we stayed out on strike, which, of course, is one of the reasons that we decided to go back.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I want to pick up on that a little bit. So you were on strike for, did you say, like, what, 4 months, and then you decided to go back to work? Now, that had to be a tough judgment call. Again, can you explain why you decided to go down that road?
Absolutely. It was tough because, of course, this is probably the most militant group of Teamsters you'll ever meet in your life. I mean, even though there are people who are missing mortgage payments, you know, wives leaving them, you know, vehicles being repoed, they didn't want to go back. They wanted to keep fighting. And, you know, it was hard to convince them that, you know, we are going to keep fighting, but we're going to fight a lot better without, you know, the whole community angry at us and, you know, you guys with missing mortgage payments and wives leaving you. So it was a tough choice, but ultimately we think it was the right thing to do because, you know, over the course of the months since then, as we've been negotiating, these companies still wouldn't give us our number one priority. I mean, they were so dug in, they would have let us rot on that picket line for a year.
Mm. Now, from what I'm reading, you got most of your demands, but I guess not for everybody, especially the retirees. And we're talking about those who are not eligible yet for Medicare. So I guess that was a sticking point. Is that something we can address down the road, or just going to leave it as such?
Yes. So we can still come back and negotiate that into future contracts. And, you know, these guys best believe that we will try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, this plan that they wanted, you know, it's just a supplemental retirement health care plan that gets people from retirement age to Medicare. It's not, you know, medical for life, like we were sometimes demonized in the media for, you know, demanding medical for life. We already have medical for life. It's Medicare. We just have to get people from when they retire until they're old enough to receive that benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, bottom line, you got 77% of the members of Local 174 that approved the contract. So that's good news. And I'm reading, this goes to 2025. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the guys have already now received their first two wage increases because it's been so long since the contract expired that they spent a whole year working under the first wage increase, or not working under the first wage increase. So, yeah, they've already received their first two bumps.
There you go. Well, congratulations on what you're able to do. A lot of solidarity there. Now, Teamsters, like you say, they're a feisty bunch. And I'm not surprised of what you said, that some of them said, nah, we don't want to go back to work. We want to stay on strike. But bottom line, they got most of what they were asking for. That's the important thing. So what's next for you, Jamie? I mean, you got one down. I'm sure you got other fires that are taking place right now in the Seattle area. Anything you want to call attention to?
Oh, I think, you know, our next big battle is going to be UPS. We had the general president of the Teamsters at our union hall, just this past weekend to have a rally to kick off the UPS contract campaign. So I hope UPS looks and sees that, you know, not a single Teamster crossed the picket line in 4.5 months in Santa Gravel. So they're next.
Yeah, we talked to one of the drivers not too long ago, and this is when we had the crazy heat wave going on. And it's ridiculous on some of the conditions that they have to work under. But, yeah, that's going to be – now, that's not up until July. Am I correct in saying that, the UPS contract?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm going to let you go. You take care. Thank you for doing the interview in English. Maybe next time we'll do it in Mandarin Chinese, okay?
All right, it'll be fun.
Jamie,
learn how to remind myself how to swear.
Jamie Fleming, Director of Communications and Research on behalf of Teamsters 174. You got to check out their website, Teamsters, that's plural, 174.net. You take care, stay safe, stay in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO, and we're checking in with the electrical workers in Iowa. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.